Welcome, Doug Jones, to the first Heroin, Butt, Sex, and Lord of the Rings podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here with me, Richie Molyneux, and Sean Keen.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi. So that's how you pronounce your last name.
Yeah, you can say Molyneux, however you want to do it.
Great. I'll remember that.
Excited to have Doug on. Doug is, among other things, a music journalist and does interesting investigative journalism into pop culture, which includes a lot of music. And I was really captivated by an article you did about how Kim Gordon from Sonic Youth was, I don't know if she had a crush on LL Cool J, but was really interested in LL Cool J and wrote an article for what, Spin Magazine?
Interviewed him for Spin Magazine in like late 80s, like 88, 89.
Before the Goo album.
Right before their, you know, they sign and put out their first big studio album, and that inspired the song Cool Thing.
Right.
Is about LL Cool J, which most people don't realize.
I just want to know, what are you going to do for me? I mean, are you going to liberate us girls from male, white, corporate oppression?
Tell like it is.
Huh?
Yeah.
Don't be shy.
Word up.
Fear of the female
fear.
And it's a fun little like fact that was on Wikipedia where I learned it, and then I went to the source material and got the full story on it, and
she was, I think, maybe less of a fan of him after the interview.
Yeah, the interview was kind of like a disaster, but she handled it very well, I thought, and didn't make fun of him. I feel like if this interview happened now, they would just internet shame him, like,
sure,
what a D-bag, like, mm-hmm. But I think she kind of went in a little bit as a fan, a little intimidated, didn't judge him. The interview kind of speaks for itself. She didn't really have to commentate on it.
Sure.
And writing that song, Cool Thing, which is kind of funny, it's not mean-spirited. I think she handled it just the right way.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Did was he invited to be on that song? Because ultimately, Chuck D is on that song,
right? I forget exact. I don't think he was invited to be on that song.
They weren't that good of friends.
I think he only recently found out about it, about the song, and that it's about him. Yeah,
right.
But when you go through it line by line, it's like, oh yeah, Cool Thing, walking like a panther.
Mm-hmm.
He posed with a panther on the cover's album. You know, it's all there. It all makes sense once you realize who's about.
Yeah, it was a revelation for me. I went back and listened to it immediately, and I was like, aha! Which is part of why I thought you'd be a fantastic first guest for this podcast.
Oh, so, thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us. We'll provide links for, as we approach these songs, for the listeners to review the lyrics and also to watch the music video. And also we'll have links to some of Doug's excellent material.
Thank you.
So let's jump into the first song, which is Everybody Wants to Rule the World from Tears or Fears, from their album Songs from the Big Chair, 1985. Written by Chris Hughes, Ian Stanley, and Roland Orzabal. And, you know, I always thought that those two guys from Tears for Fears were brothers. Didn't you think?
Me too.
That?
Yeah,
yesterday when I looked at the Wikipedia.
I had also completely assumed that. And one of my sisters always used to insist that they were twins.
Right.
Which was,
I thought,
I thought like more of an aggressive interpretation, but I was like, yeah, maybe.
Right.
Maybe it's because they have matching mullets.
Yeah, sure.
And even though one of them pulls their mullet back into a ponytail, still doesn't fool me. They still look exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're just reshaping the mullet. You're not actually making any changes.
Right. Well, he has kind of he has like bangs, cute curly bangs. In case you can't get to the lyrics right now to read them, here they are. Welcome to your life. There's no turning back. Even while we sleep, we will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world. It's my own desire. It's my own remorse. Help me to decide. Help me make the most of freedom and of pleasure. Nothing ever lasts forever. Everybody wants to rule the world. There's a room where the light won't find you, holding hands while the walls come tumbling down. When they do, I'll be right behind you. So glad we've almost made it. So sad they had to fade it. Everybody wants to rule the world. I can't stand this indecision, married with a lack of vision. Everybody wants to rule the world. Say that you'll never, never, never need it. One headline, why believe it? Everybody wants to rule the world. All for freedom and for pleasure. Nothing ever lasts forever. Everybody wants to rule the world. This seems to be sort of a lament about human nature. It's warlike, power-hungry nature. It's a little bit apocalyptic. It's a confusing little song.
Yeah, what we're here today is to talk about what the song really means.
Certainly.
Yeah. Seldom are meanings that literal, like the song's called Everybody Wants to Rule the World. It's about how everybody wants to rule the world. It's rarely that simple.
Sure.
As you'll learn from listening to this podcast.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of subtext.
Yeah, always.
I wanted to throw out that I think that this one is not about butt sex, first of all.
Okay.
Just because there is a song on the album, Songs from the Big Chair, called Head Over Heels.
Head Over
Heels. And that's a very butt sex friendly song. I think they kind of shot their butt sex wad with that song.
Sure. You want to pepper in different subject matters in an album, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think for an English band at that time, it was controversial enough to have such an open celebration of butt sex as Head Over Heels. So this one stepped aside, I thought. My take on this is that I think it's a Lord of the Rings song. And I think it is specifically, I consider the speaker of the song to be the wizard, the Istari wizard, Saruman. And I believe that this song is addressed to Grima, also known as Wormtongue.
Mm.
Essentially, at the beginning of the song, I think it takes place right after Gandalf has escaped from the Tower of Orthanc in Isengard, where he's been imprisoned.
Okay.
They say, you know, there's no turning back very early on. And that's the point when Gandalf is rescued by eagles. And at that point, Saruman's evil intentions are known to his former allies. He's on his own, and he's pot committed, you know, to use a poker analogy, because he doesn't have his other allies. He's got to just go for the orc factory.
Right. Gandalf knows his plans, and Gandalf is free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He talks about turning your back on Mother Nature. I think that's the industrialization that he does around Isengard, specifically the Forest of Fangorn.
Mm-hmm.
So his turning against the Ents, the ancient peoples of the forest, that's very much like explicitly turning his back on Mother Nature.
Gotcha.
And when they talk about nothing ever lasts forever, I really think that that's, you know, like you said, apocalyptic, but it's just not talking about this world. It's talking about Middle Earth. You know, the Age of Elves is coming to an end.
Hmm.
The White Council is disintegrating.
So what do you say to so how does a line like I can't stand this indecision married with a lack of vision?
Oh, well, that's interesting, because when Tolkien was talking about Saruman and the other wizards, the five wizards, the Istari that came there, he said that he believes that their chief temptation was impatience. Okay. And it wasn't so much evil intentions. It was so much like not wanting to be guiding things as much as forcing people to do things.
I see.
And so part of what you could say his motivation was not being a passive observer. He wanted to take things on. And that's kind of his conflict with Gandalf, is wanting to take an explicit role, you know, like going right at Sauron instead of waiting around and shaping things.
I see.
And his lack of vision, I would say, specifically refers to the Palantir. Seeing stones.
Interesting. Right. So you're saying like if Gandalf knew all that Saruman knew, he would not be indecisive. He would be more likely to agree with Saruman that they need to join with Sauron.
I think that that's right. And I think it's just mainly he's voicing what he doesn't realize is his fatal flaw, is his intolerance for indecision there.
Sure, because I do think that it is Sauron's plan to take the ring.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, his only... This is a scenario in this song where...
Saruman's, rather.
Yeah, I think specifically when he says everybody wants to rule the world, that shows the focus he has that he can't even anticipate the idea of acquiring the ring to destroy it.
Right.
And it's exactly. Not even like most people want to rule the world. It's like, no, everybody wants to rule the world. And if they do, that guides his approach.
So sort of like the way like a psychopath would be like, oh, yeah, everyone will steal your television if you give them a chance.
Yeah, 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 like, exactly.
No, they won't.
It's like, no, that's you. It's like, you're no. Everybody needs to manipulate another king and build an orc army because what other option is there?
I see. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I've got to say, it's going to be hard for me to weigh in on this because I've never read a Lord of the Rings book or seen any of the movies. And I told Richie this right off the bat. You said, that's okay. We'll work it out.
Yeah.
And so I'm sorry, Sean. If I can say this because I just met Sean, and he, once he started talking about this song being about Lord of the Rings, his posture changed, his voice changed, and I believe that you're not having me on, that you believe every word you just said.
Quickly, before you go to your point, Doug, mm-hmm. Why is that? Why is this song addressed to Wormtongue, though?
Oh, I just think that because of the setting of it, I believe it happens after Gandalf's escape. That's kind of the only person he has left to speak to.
But he doesn't like Wormtongue, right?
No, but that's his only... That's like his only actual ally.
Right, but then... Okay, so then... I guess I'm a little confused then where he's like, there's a room where the light won't find you. Sure, I get it. Uh-huh. Like where the forces of good. Holding hands while the walls come tumbling down. When they do, I'll be right behind you.
Yeah. Well, I think that's talking.
Seems affectionate.
Well, it is, but they do, you realize after the fall of Orthanc, they do essentially walk together all the way to the Shire.
Correct.
Okay. I think he has kind of a premonition of maybe not the specific doom, but, you know, the walls come tumbling down. When he talks about that combination of things, where the light won't find you, his, you know, military defeat is against some people who are hidden in caves at Helm's Deep.
Sure.
And then the walls come tumbling down is essentially what happens to his fortress very soon after.
Sure, right. Yeah, it's a very pessimistic, doom-filled perspective from his side, which is, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, that was great, Sean, but unfortunately I'm going to have to disagree with you as I feel that this song is definitely about butt sex.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I was doing some research this week, and did you guys know that the human sex ratio in the entire world population is almost 1-for-1? There's almost exactly as many men as there are women.
Okay.
Almost. There are 102 males for every 100 females, which is very close.
I thought it was the other way.
Really?
Huh. Interesting.
I think that to rule the world, you have to have sex with men and women. When if you're a straight man who makes the decision to become bisexual, then you are doubling the playing field, so to speak.
I see. Mm-hmm.
That to me is what this song is about. Ruling the world is being able to have sex with anybody and everybody.
Yeah.
And if you read the lyrics, it's all there. If you watch the music video, it's all there.
Strange music video.
Strange. Interesting. Lots of hidden messages in there.
However you want to proceed.
Welcome to your life. That's what he's talking about, losing his virginity. Okay. There's no turning back. Once you lose your virginity, you could never get it back. Turning your back on Mother Nature to me means boring sex is dead. Regular sex, as we know it, is a thing of the past. And this is the way we're going to have sex from now on. To have sex with men and women, that's how you make the most of freedom and of pleasure.
So yeah, this is almost a recruitment tool. This is like,
I didn't think of it that way. I think this is more like, you have questions, here are the answers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if you, I don't think he's trying to recruit people, but I think if you are interested, then he will take you by the hand and guide you in the right direction.
Yeah. And there, right then, proceeding from there, he says, when the walls come down, tumbling down, I'll be right behind you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
butt sex in the dark.
Right.
Yeah. So glad we almost made it. It's when they were getting close to orgasm. So glad they had to fade it. It's because he prefers lights off.
I see. So the, yeah.
It's, okay. It's like a dimmer switch.
Yeah, roommate mood lighting.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I see.
Yeah. Then when the lights are off, everyone's the same. Really, we all look the same in the dark.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to argue that. Should we talk about the music video now, or do you want to weigh in first?
I could weigh in quickly, and then we could go back to this music video because I'm interested to see how you pull it out of the music video.
I feel like I kind of just blew your mind. Not to pat myself on the back just yet, but I just the look on your face right now. If I could describe it, I feel like everything just changed.
You know, I have to say I in my initial reading of this and watching the music video and researching the song, I did not see an avenue to claim that this song was fundamentally about butt sex, but
fair enough.
You are making me reconsider that.
And this is the first I feel like anyone's called it out, because I Googled Tears for Fears butt sex and I didn't get any results.
No hits for this song.
Yeah, so I feel like I'm the first person to pick up on this.
I see.
Yeah. But well, now everyone's going to be talking about it.
Yeah, the internet's going to be ablaze. I mean, I think the I'll Be Right Behind You was very convincing. There. Also, the band's called Tears for Fears. What's the ultimate fear? Homophobia.
Especially in 1980, the mid-80s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We all know.
Mm-hmm. It was extra taboo, yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Fascinating. Yeah, let me just outline mine real fast, and then I'm interested to hear what you're saying about the music video. Okay. I'm with you, Sean, but I'm with you that I think this is about Lord of the Rings, but I situate it differently inside of Lord of the Rings. I think that this song is Elrond speaking.
Elrond Hubbard?
Elrond. Elrond the High Elf.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not familiar.
Technically, I guess a half elf.
Go on.
Speaking not only to Arwen, his daughter, but also to all of Middle Earth, sort of like, so I can parse through this quickly. I think, welcome to your life. There's no turning back. He being so old, has welcomed so many of people who are also old by now into the world. For instance, his daughter, who's already thousands of years old. For instance, Aragorn, who he adopted and raised. And I do think he's swapping between three basic perspectives. He's speaking to Arwen, he's speaking to Aragorn, and he's speaking in general to and about the various factions in Middle Earth. Even while we sleep, we'll find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. It's sort of him addressing her choice to not go into the Grey Havens and to stay, turning her back on her elven kind to stay in Middle Earth with Aragorn. Nothing ever lasts forever. It's sort of like, even for elves who are technically immortal, nothing ever lasts forever because the world changes around you, even if you continue through it. And obviously there's a room where the light won't find you, holding hands while the walls come tumbling down, is talking about his hope that she will choose to go with him to the Grey Haven, which of course she not only chooses not to, but she can't at some point because her fate is bound to the ring eventually, unfortunately. And that's what causes him to have to rely on Aragorn's success, you know, and to vote for Aragorn's success. So, you know, so glad we almost made it. So glad we almost got out of this forsaken place, because he's so pessimistic throughout the whole story. And they had to feed it, meaning the orcs, the wizards, the humans, everybody who's ruining Middle Earth while the elves are trying to protect and perfect it. And so this indecision married with a lack of vision, sort of really talking about like the humans. Oh gosh, now the humans are going to have their human age. Everybody gets a chance to rule Middle Earth. You know, whereas he himself has only done all he can to keep it from being ruled by Sauron. Meanwhile, everybody else is trying to grab the crown, you know, from out from under him. So that's my basic case on this one, is that it's his set apart, elvish, pessimistic, you know, accusation that, and his sad expectation that everyone wants to rule the world, and that's the problem. That's what's wrong with Middle Earth, is that it's this huge power struggle when it doesn't need to be, and it's just a tragedy. You know, that's my case. But I'm interested to hear your walk through the music video.
This is a great music video. I've never seen this one before until a couple of days ago. And basically, we see our lead singer, Kurt Smith, driving around the desert in a nice car. He's in Cabazon, which is, you know, 30 minutes outside of Palm Springs. And he pulls off the highway to, like, use a payphone, fuel up his car at a gas station, get directions. And he gets a little distracted on the way with the song and some dancers and some dirt bikers, but he carries on his way. Fun fact, this music video and song came out the same year as the movie Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which also shot at the same location.
Right, with the giant dinosaurs.
You see the giant dinosaurs in the background, and he also goes to the Wheel Inn, which is the same restaurant where Pee-wee walks in and says, "Large Marge sent me," and everyone turns around and they have a little shrine, you know, on this very day. She, you know,
right.
That famous scene from that great movie.
And so, that is the part of Pee-wee's Big Adventure where they are talking about butt sex, like where he's Pee-wee, I forget the young lady's name, where they're inside the dinosaur.
That's right.
And she says, "That's the problem with everybody. They have these giant butts."
Right. Come on, Simone. Let's talk about your big butt.
Yeah, exactly. And then her jealous lumberjack boyfriend storms in and tries to kill Pee-wee.
Right.
Right.
Or he waits. They spend the night, and he's outside waiting for them the next morning.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because he only heard that weird non sequitur. He didn't. Heard it in context, but the funny why it's so funny is because he only heard the part about the butt. Okay. So, still funny after all these years. Anyways, I watched the first time, and my immediate reaction is how cool, you know, the same location from Pee Wee's Big Adventure. I watched it a second time. I watched it a third time. And the more I watched it, the more the subtle little messages I started picking up on. One, at the beginning of the music video, he drives past a Tony Roma's billboard. Did you guys notice that? For the chain restaurant Tony Roma's?
I didn't.
Yeah. Tony Roma's, as you may or may not know, was an actual guy who founded the restaurant. In the 60s, he learned all the ins and outs of the restaurant business working at the Playboy Club in Chicago.
Okay.
Playboy magazine, as we all know, kind of kicked off the sexual revolution of the 60s.
Sure.
Which,
definitely the commercial side of it.
Yeah. Brought it into the mainstream. And, you know, the sexual revolution continued in through the 70s into the 80s and plays right into what this song is about. Letting go of your inhibitions and just having an open mind that sex isn't just about a man and woman getting married. It's
sure.
It could be a man and a man. It could be outside of marriage. It's reshaping the way that Americans and the rest of the world views of sexuality. So that plays right into the butt sex. And just to clarify what I said earlier, everybody wants to rule the world. I'm not saying that everybody wants to have butt sex. I'm saying everybody does want to rule the world. Not everyone knows how to achieve ruling the world. These guys, this Roland Orzabal and Kurt Smith, these guys, these British guys, they have these
ass men.
They have the answers, and they want to share that with their fan base. At the end of the music video, he stumbles upon two African-American guys wearing tuxedos and sunglasses. He imagines himself racing the dune buggies. He gets sidetracked over this what was supposed to be a quick stop to gas up.
Sure.
And make a quick call. He gets sidetracked with the fun of the song. At the end of the music video, he gets back on the highway. He gets on the 10 West. How do I know that he's getting on that 10 West? Because I could tell which, you see the sign, the 10 freeway at the beginning of the music video. At the end of the video, you see which side the mountains are on. You tell which way he's sure. going. This is more like a theory, but I feel like...
Instead of like a hard evidence case like you've been making so far.
No. Everything else up in now has been hard evidence. This is just merely a theory.
Okay.
He's on his way to Las Vegas. Why? Because...
Wait, he's going west?
West?
Yes. Because he's in Cabazon. He's close to Palm Springs.
Wouldn't that mean that he has to go east?
Isn't Las Vegas east?
Or do you have to go 10 to... You have to go the 10 to hit the 15?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. No, trust me. I spent a lot of time thinking about this, especially in the last 24 hours.
Sure.
He's going to Las Vegas because that's where we all know that where prostitution is legal.
It's Sin City.
It's Sin City. Yeah.
Does that... I'll give you that again. That this came up in our initial episode zero. I'll give you that. That might be sexually related. How does that relate to butt sex in particular, though?
Because he can experiment with prostitutes.
Sure. Without
the government interfering. And everything's above board.
You know who else was heading west at the end of his story?
Who?
Elrond.
That's true. I mean, so in the right, and I kind of do think Kurt Smith is very elvish. He looks like some sort of half elf, half actually looks more like half elf, half orc. But
I don't have to read a Lord of the Rings book to agree with that. He does look elfish.
Yeah. My issue with yours, Doug, is that I think it all rests on your sort of Superman concept of like, if you're that bisexuality in particular represents some sort of, taking hold of power in the world, that I think it all seems to rest on that.
It doesn't necessarily have to be a power thing. Rule. You know, doesn't necessarily mean like rule, like the Mongols ruled China.
Sure. You can rule your mind. You can rule your life. The world, the word world in that sense might not mean world domination. It might mean like you can fix your life in a sense or master life itself.
Yeah, I agree. Huh. Yeah.
Interesting.
Get the most out of life. We're all here for a certain amount of time. We all want to get the most out of life.
Sure.
Uh-huh. That's what the song is about to me. Not taking over sexual annihilation or power, you know, ruling over people, exercising your power over people. No, that's not how I see this song.
Sure.
Right. The other Lord of the Rings point I would make is that their album is called Songs from the Big Chair. When I think of a big chair, I think of the Seat of Seeing, obviously on the hill at Amon Hen, where Frodo sits in wearing the ring.
True.
Aragorn tries to sit in it.
Once again, I apologize for not being skilled on Lord of the Rings, but what I've learned today is that there's elves involved. And if an elf sat on a chair, it would look like a big chair.
An elf, like elf on a shelf style elf.
Yeah.
Well, and a hobbit is even smaller.
You're right.
The chair is relatively even bigger.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now, is anything else from this music video that were, because I mean, honestly, from my perspective, I kind of see this as a low effort, like difficult to, I'm not your, I'm saying the music video itself seems like a low effort sort of lark music video where the director didn't seem to have much of a vision at all. But you're saying it is littered with evidence of butt sex.
Yes. to answer your question, I don't think every reference is about butt sex, but I think every reference is about sex. And the overall message is taking your sexual finding the limits of your sexual appetite. You know, Hugh Hefner experimented with homosexuality in the 80s. Just for a brief time of his life, it was kind of like a phase he went through, which apparently his wife at the time never stopped making fun of him. He had never, she wasn't as liberal and open-minded as he was. He had never identified himself as bisexual. He was always very heterosexual, as the way we all see him still. I can't think of a more heterosexual, but he was that confident in his sexuality that he was, you know, well, how do I know I don't like it if I haven't tried it? And
it takes a lot of maturity to think that way.
Yeah, it does. So that's what the song is about. And the Playboy reference, I mean, I was looking up the director, Nigel Dick. This guy's a legend. He's directed over 500 other music videos. He's probably one of the biggest music video directors in the world.
So you're saying it's impossible that anything in that video is not intentional. It must, there's a clear, coherent messaging inside that.
True. Video. This wasn't some college student who was just like, yeah, let's do this. I don't know what I'm doing. This guy had a clear vision. Playboy magazine, sexual revolution, learning about the limits of your sexual appetite in 1985.
Right. I guess, yeah, I'm seeing it also in there with it's my own desire, it's my own remorse. Well, I'm fascinated by all of these theories, to tell you the truth. I'm a little confused as to where I stand. You can email us your theories about which of these cases you think is strongest, and you can also, I'm going to set up a call-in line. If we get really strong fan theories, we can put them on the air, you know, before we get into that week's songs. So please, if you agree, if you have additional evidence that supports any of these cases, or if you have your own separate case as to why everybody wants to rule the world is about either heroin, butt sex, or Lord of the Rings, please do. All right. Well, I guess with that, let's move on to our second song of the podcast, which is Kiss on My List from Hall & Oates, from their album Voices from 1980. Songwriters Daryl Hall and Jana M. Allen, who is not a member of Hall & Oates. This song was a collaboration between a young woman named Jana M. Allen, who was a songwriter in her own right.
Yeah, I think she's the sister of the Sarah from Sarah Smile.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's what I read, yeah. And she was originally supposed to sing it, but like their manager or producer insisted that the demo he recorded was so good, and then that demo ended up becoming the actual recording. Like, they just added...
Yeah.
That's pretty great.
I love those stories when somebody writes a song and their manager just has to step in and say, like, you know, we have to have some commercial success. You can't just give away these songs.
Sure.
There's that story about Bruce Springsteen writing Hungry Heart for the Ramones, and his manager just saying, you can't give that away. Like, you're not selling well enough to give away songs like that.
Right. You're not at that level yet.
Yeah.
Right. I can't imagine the Ramones doing Hungry Heart. But it's also sort of an odd Bruce Springsteen song. I did not know that that song was Bruce Springsteen for a long time.
Yeah.
I assumed it was like, oh, I don't know, the guys that did 8675309 or something like that. But nope, Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just poppier than usual. Less political, poppier. Yeah. Here are the lyrics. My friends wonder why I call you all the time. What can I say? I don't feel the need to give such secrets away. You think maybe I need help? No, I know that I'm right. I'm just better off not listening to friends' advice. When they insist on knowing my bliss, I tell them this. When they want to know what the reason is, I only smile when I lie, then I tell them why. Because your kiss is on my list. Because your kiss is on my list of the best things in life. Because your kiss, I can't resist. Because your kiss is what I miss when I turn out the lights. I go crazy wondering what there is to really see. Did the night just take up your time? Because it means more to me. Sometimes I forget what I'm doing. I don't forget what I want. Regret what I've done. Regret you. I couldn't go on. And if you insist on knowing my bliss, I'll tell you this. If you want to know what the reason is, I'll only smile when I lie. Then I'll tell you why. Because your kiss, I can't resist. Because your kiss is what I miss when I turn on the light, on the lights. I really miss you, babe. Your kiss is on my list. So this song, Kiss on My List, it seems to be just about a girl he has a crush on. And for some reason, he's hiding. There's a secret involved. He says it right there in the first verse. He says, my friends wonder why I call you all the time. What can I say? I don't feel the need to give such secrets away. So right here, I'm very suspicious of this situation. If someone is seeing a woman, the answer to that question is quite obvious because he likes this woman. That's why he calls her. That's why he hangs out with her. So there's something else going on in this song.
Yeah, and what other things are on this list he has? And what's more important than a kiss? What's, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
So I'll jump in with this one just straight off the bat here. I think that this song is about butt sex.
Oh.
And, but I don't think it's about homosexuality. I don't think it's about anal penetration. I think what's going on here is that this woman provides him with stimulation on his butt. I think that's what's going on here. She's given him the whole Carolina trumpet section. I think it's.
Does that mean that the list we're talking about is a list of things that he wants done to his butt?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my case would be that the list aspect is just sort of a songwriting convention that he's using here.
Oh,
because he says a list.
It's not a literal list.
It's not a literal list. It's just him saying, like, I really like what you have been doing to me.
Okay.
And he's a little embarrassed to say out loud what it is that she does for him. You know, with the guys, it's like, you know, it might seem a little weird to just be like, what do you see in that girl? She's kind of annoying and or whatever. And, you know, secret. So he,
yeah, and if the secret got out, then his friends would want that on their list. And then, so I could see why he would want to kind of keep this secret to himself.
Sure. Or they
more for him.
Sure, more for him, and also it's sort of like maybe he's just embarrassed because, you know, he's not 100% comfortable with the public knowing that he likes butt stuff, you know.
Yeah, especially, like we said, in 1980, it's
mm-hmm.
people aren't talking about this yet.
Yeah.
In 1980.
Right, and I think it's also here, like, he's basically saying, like, you can tell that it's not the kiss. I mean, I guess what he's saying, he's using a euphemism. The kiss here represents the butt stuff she does to him. And it's just sort of an excuse that he brings up when people ask him what he sees in this girl. Because he says, I only smile when I lie, then I tell them why. Or later on, I'll only smile when I lie, then I'll tell you why. It's your kiss. And it's sort of like, wink, wink, she knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And when he says the same thing to his friends, he just says, oh, she's a really good kisser.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, okay. All right.
Or he's like, I'm going out for some salad. And he's
sure
talking about.
This song was almost called Toss My Salad. They had to change the lyrics. So even though this song was written in part by another songwriter, I do feel that Daryl Hall is talking about. He sort of took the song, repurposed its meaning for him personally. Because every singer, you give a singer someone else's song, when they sing it, they're going to mean something slightly different.
Well, and you know, it's also his girlfriend's sister is the co-writer, so it's probably not a secret to her.
Right.
What Daryl and Sarah are getting up to.
Are getting up to. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right. So, and you know, it's like all these other things, the lights are on, they're off. It's sort of like, you know, he might not even be that comfortable with it. He's like in the dark with her, and then he even discusses whether he regrets what they've been doing together. And the answer is no, he does not. He really likes it.
I mean, this is a positive message, especially for 1981.
Sure, yeah.
I am going to differ with you, though. I think this is a heroin song.
You think this is a heroin song?
Yeah, just because I understand that like the butt play would be taboo, but it still doesn't seem like enough of a secret that it would be like unmentionable to anyone else. But he's also talking about bliss. He's talking about, I mean, the one that really stood out to me is when he says, sometimes I forget what I'm doing. I don't forget what I want.
Right.
To me, that is somebody who is so smacked out. They can't think, you know, they're just in a heroin fog. But the one thing that doesn't go away is the baseline desire for heroin. Like,
sure.
Like, and it's what he thinks when the lights go on. It's what he thinks about when the lights go off. It's just getting that heroin, you know?
Sure. It's like his life has become a one note.
Yeah. Symphony. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's his bliss. And the words he uses, like he can't resist. You know, there is certainly a pull of not wanting to go back to the heroin, but,
so are you saying that the person he's speaking, is he speaking to this woman with whom he does heroin, or is he speaking to like heroin itself?
I think he's talking to heroin to itself. Heroin. Like this is like a Lou Reed, it's my life, it's my wife. Although I think he still kind of thinks it's more of like a casual hooking up with heroin. He's not locked in.
He's not at that point.
I mean, he's definitely in the closet with heroin here. But also just, my friends wonder why I call you all the time. That's like, you know, it's the dealer.
Sure. So, but in that sense, you're saying you sometimes represents a dealer and sometimes represents heroin, or it, I guess it does work if he says, my friends wonder why I call you all the time.
You just might, like, you think maybe I need help. No, I know that I'm right. He's like deeply in denial, into addiction.
He's in the honeymoon period.
I'm better off not listening to friends' advice. Like this is definitely somebody who, he's pretty far from getting to a place of recovery here.
Right. It's someone saying like, no, it makes me smarter. It makes me sleep at night. Helps me be relaxed in recording sessions.
Straight up lying about everything. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
And he doesn't, and like no regrets. He just thinks like if he stops, he'll die. Yeah.
Sure. Or at least his life will lose the meaning that he's found recently by starting to do heroin.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And I would also say one other piece of evidence for this is Daryl Hall's haircut at the time.
Yeah. Something
I don't
going
understand.
On.
Well, it's just a very, like, it's like overly dry and overly wet at the same time. It's like, very like mullety.
He's sweating a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like somebody who,
like, he's making bad decisions or
like taking too much time with his hair, but also not like basically washing it, the fundamental step, you know,
because he's so busy doing heroin instead.
Yeah. He's like sleeping in his own drool. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
So Doug, now as someone who's never read or seen Lord of the Rings, are you going to come in with the third perspective that the song is about Lord of the Rings?
I wish I could. That would surprise you more than anything else I would have to say. I've all I'll just be honest. I agree with Sean that this song is about heroin.
You think it's about heroin?
Although okay.
I'm outnumbered here.
Yeah. Although I disagree with some of the things that he said. I don't think that he's singing the song to heroin itself. I think he's singing the song to his drug dealer.
His drug dealer. Yeah. Okay.
So my friends wonder why I call you all the time. He's referring to his drug dealer.
Yes. And also he never says like you, he never says she or it's
right. Like, it's unclear.
Oh yeah. 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 Right.
And
closest he says is babe.
Yeah. And I agree with you that, you know, his friends are trying to get him to go into recovery and he doesn't think he has a problem. He thinks he has it all under control, as most drug addicts do.
Like, yeah.
He knows the right type of dosage he could take to not OD.
So what is the lie that he's saying though? I only smile when I lie, then I tell them why.
It's because when he's walking down the street, you know, by himself, strangers see him. They see he's got this natural glow. They can see how happy he is. They want to know, like, hey, buddy, what, you in a good mood today? What's with the smiley face? And he has to lie. Because his response to those people when he's walking down the street is like, oh, just in a good mood today. I got, you know, my book of the month club arrived today, so I'm just in a good mood. He can't tell them why he's really in such a good mood. He has to lie and smile. Smile and lie when he tells them why.
Yeah.
And because the kiss is on my list of the best things in life. I've never taken heroin, but I hear that the best thing you can compare it to, the experience, the feeling, is the feeling when you fall in love. And I think he's saying that it's the best thing in life because I think he's saying it's better.
Sure.
Better than falling in love. And, another thing I disagree with you on is that I don't think for one second that Daryl Hall has ever done heroin or drugs in his life. I think he walks a straight and narrow path. Like we talked about earlier, at this point, they've been in the game for over 10 years and he knows how to write a pop song. He knows how to write a catchy. He's speaking to his audience. He knows that a lot of his fan base, do drugs. And that they would relate to it. And of course, to have a hit song, it has to be relatable. So I think this is all very, very genius, very, very clever.
Sure.
But I don't see him doing especially heroin. I just don't see it.
Sure. You can certainly write a song from the perspective of a heroin addict without doing heroin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I see. Yes. Yeah.
Although they did play a lot of jazz on their early albums.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he had done heroin. But again, I don't
think it necessarily requires that at all.
Yeah.
I am leaning towards your interpretation that he's just calling the drug dealer. Yeah. That makes more sense. And like, yeah, your kiss.
And at some points having a difficulty getting a hold of his drug dealer.
Well, and what's another word for another term for kissing someone? Giving them a smack in your lips.
Yeah. Smack?
Okay. I'd call that a weak argument, but okay. Sure.
And so many people overdose. A kiss of heroin can
be
a kiss of death.
Yeah,
I go crazy wondering what there is to really see. That's I think he's talking about. He's having a hard time getting a hold of his drug dealer. Where is he? Did the night just take up your time? Because it means more to me. He's sent like 7, 8, 9, 10 pages.
Yeah.
And he hasn't gotten a response yet from his drug dealer. Mm-hmm. Where is he? What is he doing? Is he at a nightclub? Is he at, you know, a late night diner? Is he with a lady? Where is he? Why sure. isn't he getting back to me? Well, it's frustrating. Like, he needs his heroin and he can't get it.
Right. Yeah. And that sort of go crazy wondering what there is to really see. It's sort of like, especially, you know, like, oh gosh, that whole section in Pulp Fiction where, who's the guy? Eric Stoltz is talking about, the different heroines he has available there for John Travolta.
Right. Right. I just saw that movie for the first time in over 20 years and it holds up really well.
I'm sure. Yeah, and so that might be like, oh gosh, what kind of cool new heroin can I try?
Right.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty strong. I still do like my pet theory about the rim jobs that he's getting. I'm still attracted to it, but I think you've both delivered pretty strong cases here about this being about heroin.
Yeah, and I can't really see a Lord of the Rings take particularly.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of one thing that Lord of the Rings kind of lacks is
kissing.
Horniness. Yeah. There's like a lot of like doomed kisses or like kisses on the forehead, but is sort of like lust. Even if you took it in a freewheeling sexuality way, that doesn't really exist in Middle Earth.
It doesn't exist, right? Yeah. It's there's not much kissing in the story.
I learned something new today. That's something I could carry with me and bring out at parties. Like if I want to break the ice and meet interesting people, like, hey, so did you guys know there's not that much kissing in Lord of the Rings? Like, oh, not, you're right. No, I never thought of it, but you're right.
Yeah, you have to go to the fan fiction if you really want some hot, horny stuff to come out of Lord of the Rings. You know, there's probably
wouldn't it be
a lot
weird
of that.
If like I've never read a Lord of the Rings book, never seen a movie, but I get really into the Lord of the Rings adult fan fiction.
Sure,
and that becomes my basis. for Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, in the up on the tower when you know. Gollum's butt fucking Shelob,
what are you
the
talking
giant spider.
About, like, oh come on, you didn't read like everyone knows about Gandalf. Like you're like get away from me, creep.
Gandalf and his horse cock. Yeah, right. Sure, gotcha. I think you guys might have broken my spirit on this one. And
well, sorry.
Yeah, I mean,
I just did what was right.
Yeah. When I turn on, when your kisses might have, what
you
I
win some, you lose some, Richie.
I suppose. Well, after I easily convinced both of you that everybody wants to rule the world is from Elrond's perspective, I'll take this L on this one, I suppose. I'm a little confused. When I turn on the. Is it turn off the lights or turn on the lights at the end? But your kiss is what I miss when I turn.
When he sings, it's the line is your kiss is what I miss when I turn on the lights. He's talking about he really misses heroin once it begins to wear off.
Sure.
Turning on the lights means that his high is almost gone.
Or when he's going about his professional day.
Yeah.
Sort of. I could see that.
Yeah. Huh. And I disagree with you, Richie, that I think this is a literal list.
You think it's a list that he has? He's like,
yeah, like a grocery shopping list.
And it says like
to-do list.
Get heroin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's maybe the second or third thing on his list.
Sure. He's like, take a shower.
I think number one on the list, we're talking about Hall & Oates. We're talking about a group that sold over 40 million records. I think number one thing on his list is to write a hit song.
That song,
yeah. Well, if you can combine your interests, you know, you write a hit song
while you're taking a shower.
Yeah. Write a hit song, and then take Oates to get his mustache trimmed. Third, your kiss. Yeah.
Yeah. In this case, meaning
a variety of heroin. Yeah.
Right.
Meaning page my drug dealer.
Yeah.
And hope to God that he calls me back within 15 minutes
before God, I die.
Right.
That would have been so difficult in 1981, you know,
just get a hold of people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We forget. It wasn't that long ago. How did, if I can just bring it back to Kurt Smith.
Sure.
Uh-huh. you know, we're wondering why he had to pull off the freeway to get directions. It's because he has no GPS.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he already had passed the 15. He hit Camp Cabazon. He's like, I'll get off here. What did you make of the beginning of the Everybody Wants to Rule the World video where a young boy shoots toy guns at him on his way by? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So right off the bat in the video, the first shot is a young boy coming out of a house.
Yeah.
Kurt Smith drives by in a convertible and the child shoots at him. My take on that is like he's commenting on it's a very pessimistic comment about human nature again. Like he's saying like, look, here's a young child. Even this young child wants to hurt me. Yeah. Would hurt me if he could.
I think I'm going to go real abstract on this one, but because I did watch this music video like 5 times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
The kid has 2 guns. Later, we see 2 guys wearing tuxedos. And then later after that, we see a dude in his early 20s. He's double fisting 2 beers. He's got a beer in each hand. Two. There's 2 members of Tears for Fears.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that all those pairs, all those 2s are all intentional because there's 2 members of the group.
And it takes 2 to tango, or certainly to have butt sex. Although you can have butt sex all by yourself.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I'm not implying that this song is only about butt sex, but in order to rule the world, you have to introduce that into your repertoire.
Sure.
I'll just stress that over and over again.
Yeah, grow up, have some butt sex, jeez.
Yeah. What's the worst that could happen? You don't like it. All right, so then you don't do it again.
Right.
Big deal.
Likewise with this song, if you have any interesting theories, hit the link in the show description to write in or call in with your own theories, and we will potentially readdress these 2 songs on future podcasts.
And we'll send you a t-shirt in the mail.
We'll send you one of Doug Jones's private t-shirts. I'll break into his closet, take a t-shirt, mail it to you, and Doug will be none the wiser.
There's security cameras everywhere.
In his compound.
Yeah.
With his snipers on the roof.
I was going to say Doug Pound, but that's the name of a comedian. So let's just give him
Taken, yes.
Yeah. Let's give him a shout out.
Doug Lessenhop, shout out. Well, I think we've really cracked some codes here today. I think we're all in agreement that Kiss on My List is about heroin. We are very divided. Where are you, Sean, you're still with Saruman.
I'm still with Saruman, Saruman. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, although I'm going to watch that video like 7 or 8 times now, I think. And maybe Pee-wee's Big Adventure afterwards.
Yeah, like hurt. Have you seen that documentary about The Shining? Room 237 or something. Yeah. It's basically the theories that have come out of the fans that have watched the movie hundreds of times.
And the consensus is The Shining is about Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
I really thought I had seen this video many times, and then watching it again today, I there were many moments that I had no memory of. The dudes in tuxedos in particular. I pretty much mostly remembered the kid with the gun, I think.
Mm-hmm. 2 guns.
Yeah, remember, yeah, 2 guns. Yeah.
Right.
Right. Like I said, 2, yeah.
2, the number 2.
Just remember the number 2.
Wends through all of their work. 2, 2, 2. Yeah, we will probably revisit Tears for Fears because they have other songs that are very mysterious.
So many hits. I did karaoke last week. 3 Tears for Fears songs in the first 45 minutes.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. They're still relevant, and mm-hmm. and their fan base is only growing.
That's true. And it's also very satisfying to sing like Kurt Smith. You just never get to like
people bellow. Don't sing like that anymore. Bellow. I love singing like that.
Yeah.
It's romantic. Really. It's fun. It's people need to take a note and like start singing like that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are doing all kinds of weird Cupid doll stuff these days, and or mumbling. And they're not belting it out like he was doing.
Yeah,
belt it out for Christ's sakes, people.
Sing. All right, well, gentlemen, thank you very much. Theme music by Wet and Reckless. This has been a great first episode, and we'll see y'all again soon.
Thank you.
Bye.